If you're someone who has a passion for cut flowers, our environment, and wants to make the world more beautiful, you're in the right place. Whether you're growing flowers for pleasure or profit, I'm on a mission to empower flower enthusiasts and professionals to help change the world around them. Whether you're just starting out and need a helping hand, or are looking to scale a substantial flower business, I'm your cut flower woman. Welcome to the Cut Flower Podcast. So let's kick off. So I am delighted to welcome Jan Ford to our podcast today. Jan is a flower photographer and stylist, and I followed you for quite a long time. I could say I was a fan. I think your work is truly breathtaking because I believe that taking photographs and photography of flowers is quite difficult. I think it's one of the most difficult things to take flowers off. So I'm in awe. So please tell our listeners a little bit about you, your background, and how today, how you got to where you are today, your journey, I believe, from textiles to fashion, now styling and photography. How exciting. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I suppose it's not a million miles from fashion and photography, really, because it's still a creative art form, isn't it? Photography and arranging flowers. So the two kind of go hand in hand, I suppose, for me anyway. But I did a degree in fashion and textiles at Kingston, travelled down from North Yorkshire with my little suitcase back in the day when there was no mobile phones and no mum to check on me and say, have you arrived safely? And I did a 3-year degree course at Kingston and entered the fashion world. And 10 years in the industry, lots of travelling, all very exciting. And then it was time to settle down and have a family. I just couldn't do both. I couldn't do the travelling and leave my babies behind. So I actually stopped work for a while. But bubbling along in the background, I was always doing something creative, and also the photography was always something. I was always like the designated family photographer. It's like, oh, Jan will take the photo. And it wasn't just ripping out an iPhone then, was it? It was just like a whole performance of getting out a camera. So I suppose that's how I started. And I thought I was quite a good photographer compared to everyone else in the family anyway. And then, my children grew up and they didn't want to be photographed, you know, whenever I said, come on, let's have a photo session. So, it was about that time we got a dog and I was like doing a lot of walking out in nature, and I always had my camera with me, and that's really how my love of taking pictures of flora, fauna, trees began, really. And that's when I realised I was a pretty useless photographer and went on a few photography workshops, and that's how it all began, really.
We'll talk about North Yorkshire later.
Yeah.
So you're obviously born in North Yorkshire, moved south, and now you're going north again.
Yes.
So you're returning to the motherland.
We are back to our roots, yes. We're actually returning to the village that my husband grew up in. So it really does feel like we're going home. My husband and I have been together forever. We met at school. So it really is like a journey we've been on together, really. And we always said when the kids left home, we would move out of this area. So now let's get on with it. In fact, in 5 days' time, I'm moving. So
where in Yorkshire? Go, and then we'll talk about this. Whereabouts in North Yorkshire?
Well, it's near a little town called Thirsk, which people might have heard of from, you know, James Herriot. That's where he had his practice. And it's between the moors and the dales. So we've got the choice of both. We can either come out of our drive and turn left or right. And, it's a beautiful part of the world. And I'm very excited to be going back there to actually enjoy being there.
Well, I hope my husband doesn't listen to this episode because I'll be in trouble, because he's a Yorkshireman. His mother's from Whitby, and he spends most of his weekends, I would say, riding his trials motorbike across the moors. He's a member of Richmond Motorcycle Club, and he helps organise trials bike rides and all sorts up there. And all his friends are in Richmond.
So if we could move to North Yorkshire, he would love that. So I hope he is not listening to this. So that's like sort of the motherland really for him.
Well, it's going to be a lot colder and wetter up there, people keep telling me. But to be honest, you know, with the climate change, we've had as many sunny days as anybody else, to be honest. And I don't like the heat anyway. So it's going to be perfect for me.
Perfect for photography.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. So I came across you this year again as the curator of Strawberry Hill. And obviously I went and visited Strawberry Hill.
That's
a sustainable flora event that recognises floral artwork, true floral artwork.
Yeah.
And recognises the British cut flower industry. How did you get involved? Tell us more about the festival.
Well, I work a lot with a floral designer called Lee Chappell, who actually lives in Strawberry Hill. And so she was often doing flowers at the house. And Strawberry Hill is a charity, and, you know, like other charities, always struggling to raise money. And they had an exhibition called The Lost Treasures, where they bought back all the beautiful treasures that used to be in the house, which was since had been sold off by gambling relatives over the years, you know. How it is. And they were all coming back to the house, and David Attenborough, who's a patron, was going to open the event, and Lee did the flowers. And she thought, oh goodness, I better not use any floral foam, because I think the Blue Planet, I can't remember which one, maybe the Blue Planet just came out. So you know, climate change is in everybody's consciousness. And so she just created two very beautiful wild urns that just used chicken wire and water. And then after that event, she was chatting with someone at the house and how else could they use flowers to raise money. And that's when she contacted me and said, I've got this idea, let's go for it. And the idea, the premise behind Strawberry Hill Flower Festival was not only to promote British flowers, like you said, but to show how sustainable methods can be used in creating really large-scale floral designs, and some smaller ones as well. There's lots of urns initially and all that kind of thing. And so that's how it came about. So it's been going for 5 years now, and the first year it's like we begged our floral friends, can you please take part? You know, can you do one of your amazing urns? Can you do the stairs? You know, it was a big ask because there was no money being changed hands, and there still isn't really. And yeah, each year it's just grown. And I think the year you've now just come has been probably the biggest, most fantastic year, because it's really gained traction. People are really aware of it as an event that's designed to promote British flowers and sustainability within the industry. And in the past 2 years, we've been in association with Flowers from the Farm, because we realised that there were so many members actually coming on board, being there anyway, either growing the flowers or because, you know, they have to be British grown flowers. So it made absolute sense to be paired with Flowers from the Farm for this event. So, yeah, it's really gained traction. And in fact, somebody said to me this year, it's like a fashion show for flowers.
Yeah, and definitely.
That's kind of how we see it, really. It's fashion, it's art, it is an art form. And we just want to show innovation and how beautiful British flowers really are. And it's September, we've held it in September for the past 3 years. And that's such a beautiful time in the British floral season, isn't it?
Yeah.
With all the dahlias and the wilderness and the hedgerows and all the lovely. And you've still got late summer flowers coming through as well. So it's a really lovely time. So, yeah, we're very pleased with how it's going.
I loved it. The staircase for me was amazing. I loved, and there was a couple of windowsills that were really inspirational. You know, they were all beautiful, but the one that was really clever for me, because it could be replicated quite easy, was the one with the little milk bottles, and then they went up in size. But all they were bud vases, in effect, but kind of covered the whole window ledge at different levels.
Yes.
And was just stunning, but actually really simple in its time techniques. But it actually looked, for me, I thought, wow, you could do that in churches, you could do that anywhere. You could replicate that fairly easily.
It is.
The whole thing was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah. But things don't have to be complicated, do they? I mean, no. There was the huge spider, which was an incredible installation, just amazing. But then, you've pointed out the bottles on the windowsill, and that's very simple in its execution, but just so effective. And yes, anybody could really do that, and it really showcases the individual stems beautifully, doesn't it? Different heights and. A lot of the rooms we have to use dried flowers because of humidity levels and preservation of the house, but we're very lucky in that we can essentially do what we want in there. So it's a beautiful venue to have this
and a sellout. There were people turning up behind me who couldn't get tickets, so it was good.
It's been busy for the past few years, and we always say you must book, otherwise you'll be disappointed. But this year, it was absolutely true. You couldn't really get in unless you had a ticket. I think next year they're going to maybe expand the day so that more people can come in, because it's quite a small house, as you saw, with that staircase. It's actually quite a small staircase, so you can't have unlimited people, going through the house at any one time. So yes, lots of things to take on board, but we're very lucky that people really want to take part now.
Planning for 2024. We always live in the future, don't we?
It's definitely, the dates are the diary, yes, the 13th to the 15th next September. So, we've already started talking about it, and in January we'll start the planning meeting. I mean, we plan it all year. It's quite a big event to pull off, really. It's fabulous. It goes from strength to strength.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
A small business? Do reels get you reeling? Is SEO just a three letters put together? Content planning something you know you should be doing, but just never get round to it? Do join our Growth Club online. What is it? It's a supportive community. It's all about growing your business. It provides trainings and guest speakers join us every month. Is it time to work on your business and not in it? The link for more information is in the show notes. So I know you grow too, and obviously when you're moving to Yorkshire, you're going to grow some more, I would assume.
Yes.
What does your plot look like? What do you grow now, and what do you hope to grow in the future?
Well, my garden here is a little bit unloved because I've known I'm going to Yorkshire, and we've been doing the house up in Yorkshire for a good few years. So any gardening things that I buy or invest in, I've gone to Yorkshire, and it's quite a nice established garden anyway. I think it's had some lovely trees and shrubs that somebody in the 80s had put in, somebody that's very passionate about gardening. So but yes, I will have more space to grow, and I grow very simply. I don't grow anything complicated. If something doesn't germinate, I kind of think, oh, it's not germinated, I'm never trying that again. And I suppose I should persevere in.
I don't know. Lysianthus is a no-no in the United Kingdom. Oh, really? Unless you've got the patience of a saint and loads of time. And I just think maybe some things you just have to accept aren't going to work and move on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I love growing cosmos, all varieties. I'm kind of quite a more is more person. I don't mean that in a materialistic way, but I mean, why have just a bunch of cosmos when you can have a whole wheelbarrow full? So I will grow things. I mean, they're kind of foolproof, aren't they, really, cosmos? I love my dahlias. So I hope that I will grow twice as many next year. What else do I grow? Oh, well, I'm actually...
Remind me, I'll send you some dahlia tubers. because I've just ordered 5,000 in from Holland.
Oh, my gosh.
And in 13 different varieties. And I do sell them. I do sell them to flower farmers. And the ones I've ordered, and that's a bit like a fashion design. You've got to think, okay, well, what's the design next year? How are we going to work? You know, it's been very pastely and creams in the past. Next year, I think it's going to be quite strong. So it'll be dark burgundies, and almost I've ordered one which is almost black called Ibanetta. And I think those strong colours with pastels will be where, I don't know, it's like a bit like a fashion designer. It's trying to work out where it's going.
Well, but, I was going to absolutely say that, you know, just like fabric suppliers have to think ahead what the designers want to use, what are the trends going forwards. I think you as growers have to think exactly the same way, you know, where is floral design going and what are people looking at, what colours are people looking at. So absolutely.
This year was the year of the apricot. And I think next year will be the year of the apricot with burgundy. So like a dark, much darker sort of, if you like, sort of quite striking. And it is kind of what you're asked for. Yeah. And I work with Vic Brotherson in London.
Oh, yeah.
And I supply her. And you can tell the trends there because she's very heavily involved in corporate and events, and you can kind of work out what the trends were. And so this year we did an awful lot. We did 30,000 tulips, madness. But we did 30,000 tulips, and some of them to tall 1.2-metre gorillas were almost black. They were purple and almost black. She couldn't get enough of them. And you started thinking, hold on a minute. You know, like you take a van load through and she'd have another load and another load and another load. And it was always the unusual kind of darker colour. So, it's interesting. I don't know. We have to predict in some sense. The tulips are just about to go in now and I've predicted what it's going to do next year. We just got to hope I'm right.
I'm sure you are. Yes. Well, I think there's always going to be room for the blushes and the apricots and the soft colours, but people, you know, especially for brides, people just can't resist those. But it's nice to break out, isn't it, with some colour. And I think red is quite strong as well. I think red will make a comeback. And
That's gone out. It'll be back.
It'll be exciting. Two things that are in two tones seem to be the Rembrandt style tulips and the two tone dahlias seem to be very popular, and they're really lovely to photograph as well. Those dark colours are actually really hard to photograph.
Are they?
Yeah. They can appear like kind of black holes in arrangements, can't they? But I guess if you've got like a solid, huge bunch of dark tulips, then that's just glorious, isn't it? So rich.
Well, remind me, I'll send you some cranberry dahlias, which are like Rembrandt. They're like a painting. They're kind of very tonal. And when you look at them, you think, oh, they've been painted. And obviously they haven't, but they're a dahlia. So I chose them because I thought they looked quite unusual. I thought, oh, they'll be nice. So I'll keep you posted. They arrive in February. Let me know. You can put them in your new garden.
Well, my box of 100 tulips is neither here nor there, really.
Still quite a lot.
It feels like a lot for me.
November, you get them in November.
Yeah, I've still got narcissus to put in, so we'll see what happens. I'm always late. That's the thing.
You don't want to be early. Most people, I'm forever telling people on Instagram, don't do it, don't do it. It's too early, it's too early. It's like tulips. Do not plant them in October. Plant them in November, December. Wait for the cold. We usually wait. I was talking to the team today. I said, it's still far too warm. Let's go for the end of November. We want some frost. We want the cold soil. And I still see people doing it. And it's the same about lifting dahlias. You know, people start to lift dahlias before the frost. And I'm going, no, wait for the frost, because then all the energy will go back into the tuber and then you can pull them. But they get very concerned about the rain and the wet. And certainly in the north and in Scotland, they'll be pulling theirs up earlier because last year they all went mouldy. But it's kind of like, I think we do it too early. We do things too early.
Yeah, always wanting the next thing. Yeah, well, I dug my dahlias out because obviously I want to take them with me. And I was caught out last year, like a lot of people, I think. The ground was too wet when I dug them up and I didn't leave them to dry properly. So
we all got caught out with that.
Yeah, so I felt a bit heartened that there was some like professional growers. Well, not heartened that they were caught out as well, but I thought, oh, it's not just me. Yeah.
So tell us about your business. You know, I saw a workshop in Yorkshire that I thought, oh, that would be wonderful. I'd love to go up to Yorkshire. How idyllic to do a workshop. What does your business do, obviously, now? What does it look like?
Well, I do quite a lot of things. I do prioritise creating content that I want to create. So first and foremost, I create something that I like for myself. And then I license quite a lot of my images to card manufacturers. So that's quietly kind of going on in the background. And that's all very nice. And then I do workshops as well. So I often do them in collaboration with someone like Lee. I work with Claire at Fig and Fern in Lincolnshire as well. Yeah. And going forward into Yorkshire, I'll do quite a lot by myself as well, because I'll have the room there to do it at my house. And then I also photograph for florists. A lot of people ask me to take imagery of them setting up for a wedding, because often there isn't the time to take your own work, to take pictures of your own work when you're setting up a wedding, and then you go away and then you're in the hands of the wedding photographer and they might not have captured the flowers or indeed you setting up, obviously. So, I do quite a few things like that. So there's all sorts going on that I kind of fit around my lifestyle, really. I never say I do one thing, because I feel like I do quite a few things. And then I have freelanced for floristry friends, because I do like doing the flowers. And then I always learn so much doing that as well. So, yeah, lots of different bits and bobs that I do to create my, I suppose, a brand, really.
Definitely it's a brand. I mean, you look on your Instagram, it's definitely a brand, because, you know, it feels a brand. You know, all of it has, although every single image is different, it still feels like it's in the one brand.
Yeah, I suppose it's in my style. Yeah. I mean, I do like to break out now and then and feel like I'm doing something different. As somebody always says, oh, I can tell it's your picture.
Yeah, and that's what you want. That's what you want.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's one of the hardest things, isn't it? Creating your own style, really, on Instagram. So that's all good, I suppose.
So what three pieces of business advice would you give to startups or new businesses? You know, we run an online business membership called The Growth Club and has lots of members I know will be listening. And it's all about all sorts of businesses, lots of flower farmers, but lots of people involved in floristry or different types of businesses. What three pieces of business advice would you give anybody?
Oh, goodness me. I think developing your own style and brand, I think is quite key. And that can take some time, can't it? But I think you've got to become known for doing something. So whatever that is, whether it's growing dahlias or photographing trees or whatever it is, I think you become known for doing something. I think just having a go. Don't be afraid to give something a go. I think imposter syndrome can be the worst crippling thing. It still can be for me, really. So you've almost got to have tunnel vision, haven't you? Don't look too much at what other people are doing and think, oh, so-and-so is doing that bigger and better than me, therefore I shouldn't have a go. Just go for it. And see what happens. And there's a lot of winging it goes on. And I think everybody's doing that, really, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And people have failed and picked themselves back up. I remember, can't remember Duncan, was it? Was can't remember his surname from Dragon's Den. He wanted to raise some money to have nursing homes, but he didn't have a nursing home and he didn't know anything about nursing homes. So he hired this building and he put all these people in it and dressed them as nurses. And he had old people in bed and he faked a nursing home. And he had the investors coming around going, yeah, you obviously know what you're doing. Yeah, here's your investment. And that was the beginning. And it was kind of like, you know, fake it till you make it. He certainly did. And he had a belief that he could do it and he had some way of doing it. And he kind of did it.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing, isn't it, really? I'm not the world's greatest person at faking it until I make it. But I think sometimes you have got to, there's nobody's going to big you up like you. And so you've got to, that takes a practice as well, doesn't it? But, I think you got to be kind of quite intentional and believe in yourself. And I think for me as well, collaboration, it's not all about competition. It's collaborate with people, find either other growers or photographers or designers, and create days where you're just enjoying being creative or collaborating or sharing advice, because I don't think anybody can do it on their own. So for me, collaboration is a big thing, and even if it means that I haven't come away making any money, I've collaborated, I feel good about it, everybody's got something out of it. Find like-minded people, really.
I love it. I love collaborating. I look at our Growth Club, for instance, which is an online business membership, and it was formed out of an absolute collaboration that was actually, if you put it on paper, would never have worked, because it's me, 60, and been in business a long time, and kind of quite, and had a few businesses and running a business club fine. And then Tom Coleman is my business partner in the Growth Club. Now, Tom is half my age, so he is 30. And he's the age of my children. And it's kind of like, but it worked. We actually laugh most of the time and laugh our way through the days. And he has a very different perspective on everything than I do. And he's much more social media savvy, and he's good at photography and he's good at reels. And he has a different kind of, and I help him from a business side. So like this week he needed a studio to do some filming in for something completely unrelated to me. And he said, "Oh, Ros, I don't know what to do." I said, "Well, come here and use the workshop. I haven't got anybody in today. Use the workshop." And they set it up it was all to do with candles yesterday. And they set it up as a studio, and he did all the filming and a strategy day, and he had a great time. But it's kind of like a collaboration in a way, because I kind of feel like it really works. I can't explain why it works. On paper, it definitely wouldn't work. But the two of us kind of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And so many people work in isolation as well, don't they, when they're running their own business. So it's great just to have somebody else to be a sounding board, whoever that might be, and to work with. So that's great. And I think that's why social media is so good, isn't it? Because, you can all chat backwards and forwards. People are so generous with their knowledge and, answering questions, and it's all out there to be discovered, isn't it, really? Whatever you're into.
Well, your Instagram is pretty impressive, and the number of followers you've got is pretty impressive, and that's half of it, is about being visible, isn't it? Because if you're not visible, you can't have a business. But on Instagram, you're really visible, and you've got a massive following. I mean, and a hats off, because it's not easy.
It's not easy. I think there's a couple of things that were going on, there's a few things going on, which is why I've got a big following. One, I was quite early in getting onto Instagram. It all just kind of coincided with my love of photography. Where was I going to put these images? And it was like, oh, there's this app called Instagram, and that's where all the creatives are. And it was just like, oh gosh, this is a nice app. Let's see what happens. But Instagram, in a way, helped me develop my style, because I discovered so many incredible people on Instagram. I was like, oh, I want to be like them. Actually, I want to be better than them.
Yeah.
And, I cringe when I look back at my early posts. You have to scroll a long way to find them. But I leave them there, because everybody starts from somewhere. It has been a journey. Nobody starts out being amazing. Sorry, I don't mean I am amazing.
You are.
To sound like that. Nobody starts out as their end goal. I started out with only a handful of people following me or even commenting. And it's hard work. But it is a social media app, and you have to be sociable on it. And that's another thing that I'm very big on. I'm always chatting on it, trying to answer comments, commenting on other people. That's a big part of it as well. For me, people are following me because they like my imagery. So my imagery's got to be good. There can be no slipping on my part, you know, just putting up a little iPhone picture that isn't a bit blurry. That's just not going to happen. So consistency is a huge thing on Instagram as well, to keep the algorithm happy. And I only post 3 times a week. You know, you don't have to be there every day, twice a day, but whatever it is, just be consistent. But yeah, it's hard to gain growth on Instagram unless you suddenly, you know, go get some kind of hit on a reel.
I did on something completely nuts. We did this reel, Tom and I, talking about verbena. And I have to say, it's very beautiful because it's purple and yeah, it looks like it was lots of it. Fine. 1.2 million people. Wow. Watched it. You have to go back and watch it. It's only about 2 weeks ago.
So what did you do? It was just an accident or?
It was an accident. We were just talking about the fact, a complete accident. I'd love to say it was completely strategically planned, but it was not. We do lots of filming anyway, and we put quite a lot of reels out.
Yeah.
And it happened to be a reel on why you should grow verbena in your garden and what a great perennial it is. And of course, then I learned it's not perennial in the States and Canada. It's actually an annual. So you learn everything new every day. But yeah, we were talking about this plant. But it caused massive engagement because there was all this talk about what it is. It's a perennial animal. And then 1.2 million at its last count. And it was done to trending audio. I get that. That's fine. But the trend, I chose the trend really well because it was on its, it was quite low. It was like 1,000, you know, trend. And then it was on its way up. And something must have picked it up. Yeah. And then when you went on the page of the trending audios, it was the first one you saw as an using this audio. It was mental. Yeah. And then what you notice when that happens, that everything else on your page starts to gain traction as well, because yeah, they're going to look at all the other things you've got. And so I went from 20,000 followers to 40,000 followers in a month.
Yeah, that's incredible. 1 month.
So that was incredible growth. It was just lucky. I'd like to say it was strategic.
Well, I would like to say, yes, there are things you can do to make a reel go viral, but they're really, trending audio is one of them, but that's no guarantee either. Keeping them quite short and snappy seems to work as well, but it just depends what, you know, captures people's imagination, isn't it? And so if you get lucky like that, people love to gain some inspiration and information, don't they? Really, you're telling them and it's obviously sparked off a conversation. So there's a number of factors, but if you wanted to repeat that, It's hard to do.
I mean, we're posting probably daily or every other day, a reel probably at the moment. And the growth is probably 3,000 a week. So it's really elevating. Yeah. But it basically started from that, right? I'm sure of it.
That's amazing.
Instagram has got hold of it, I think, somehow, and gone, hold on a minute. They're posting really consistently and they're posting all these reels. And let's have, and somebody up there is going, let's have a look at this account because it's madness.
Yeah.
And it happens during the day is the United Kingdom. I see it. And then overnight it's the US and Australia. And I see it move back around again. And I mean, I've become addicted because it's almost like a game. Mm. So you put a reel up with a trending audio that doesn't work and it flops and you think, right, that didn't work. Go again. And it becomes quite obsessive. You could become really obsessive with it. You could become addicted to the doing reels. It's like,
Well, I think you can become addicted to the app full stop. I mean, I know in the early days, I probably was, and I had a lot of growth in the early days. There was less people on it and there was no reels. It was all about still imagery. But now it's an unknown quantity. I think there's a lot of luck involved and there's a lot of talented people out there that don't get any exposure. And then, you know, it's just so difficult to predict. But I think consistency is key and using hashtags is really important. Some people say not, but I don't believe it. I think the hashtags are really key. And what time of day were you posting your video?
Oh, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. When I look at my audience, they're there all the time, all during the day. It doesn't matter if it's 6 a.m., 9 a.m., 12 o'clock. Honestly, for my audience, it makes absolutely no difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
For lots of people it does, like they're doing 9 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock in the morning. For me, absolutely no difference. And even at the weekend, it makes absolutely no difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm quite rare. I think most people would go first thing in the morning, last thing at night, depending on the audience.
The thing is, to be consistent and to make the app, to make Instagram work for you, you've got to post when it suits you. So if you're a flower farmer, you're going to be out in the field first thing in the morning, especially in the summer. And maybe you get a lunchtime or a coffee break, and that's when you're on it, or in the evening again. But even then, in the evening, you're probably busy as well cutting. So we're busy full stop flower farmers. I don't know how you do it. But you've got to make it work for you. Otherwise, you'll lose heart. So you've got to choose the right time of day that suits you, really. And if you're able to post, you know, throughout the day or any time, then that's great. But yeah, for me, I tend to post in the evenings.
Yeah, and I think it's about choosing your channel as well, because we could all go off and do TikTok and Threads and Facebook and Pinterest and I get all that, but that would be an absolute full-time job.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The new Plants of Distinction Autumn Catalogue is now available and contains over 1,000 different flower and vegetable seeds, with over 150 new and exciting varieties added this year alone. Cut flowers in an extensive array of individual colours are a speciality, and added to this are many unusual annual and perennial seeds, together with the hard-to-find heritage favourites. So if you're looking for something a little different, be it choice cutting flowers suitable for both fresh and dried arrangements, or cottage garden and container growing varieties, you need look no further. You can download or request a copy of the new autumn catalogue by visiting the website plantsofdistinction.co.uk, where an exclusive 30% discount is available to all podcast listeners when ordering seeds by using the discount code CUTFLOWER30.
No, absolutely. I think you do. I think when you choose your social media, and a lot of people, Facebook still works for them. So why, you know, and Instagram's never really worked. Facebook doesn't really work for me. I love Pinterest. I probably was on Pinterest before Instagram, because, again, it's visual and you're building up like mood boards and styling boards and inspiration. I get a lot of my inspiration from Pinterest. So Pinterest really works for me as well. But ultimately, if you've got a website, that's where your focus needs to be, really. And everything's about driving traffic to that website, isn't it, really? Yeah. So whatever channel that is that works for you. I mean, I'm not even going to get started on TikTok, because I just think, well, you know, I've got my one app that I love. I haven't got room for two.
I haven't got room for it either. And there was a woman, I watched something the other day, I think she's called Tube Lady or something. And basically she does all her videos on a tube in London, and she's by the window and her hair is floating off. These have gone nuts. And now so much that she gets other people on the tube. She must do it at night, because there's no one there at 5 o'clock, you know, up to the circus, that's for sure. And she's basically in this tube. Look her up, Tube Woman, I think she's called, on TikTok. It's absolutely mad, but there are millions and multi-millions following her. And I thought I'd become flower farmer Tube, or I'd become, but I mean, it's nuts. The whole trend is nuts, and I can't get my head around it. So it's like, whatever.
I know, and I think I don't want to say it's a generation thing either, but you know, I think if I was starting all over again, I might be on TikTok. But I think you get very cozy and established in your social media apps, and it's about a community as well. So, you know, you've built up your friendships and the people that follow you and want to see your work. So it's about keeping the engagement there and your community happy. And I think I find difficult to say goodbye to all of that and go off onto another app.
No. With your level of following and your presence on Instagram. No. Stay put. It's very, very good.
Well, I stay put for as long as I enjoy it, and I do enjoy it. And I've met a lot of friends in real life from Instagram. So it is really a flower community to me.
I agree. So if you're on a desert island, what books would you take with you, or indeed your items? I suspect you take your camera and your phone. But what would you take with you to a desert island? Is there any particular books or anything you would desperately not be able to live without?
Oh, well, that's quite tricky. Are we talking flower books? Are we talking? Cause I do read a lot. I mean, I am a big fan of an epic, sweeping drama. And I really love Lonesome Dove. I think that's the trilogy. Or I think there's other books related to it. It's a journey across the Texas plains. And, you know, there's all sorts. There's facing adversity. I think I'd need that on my desert island, wouldn't I?
Yes.
I'd need to be brave and learn a few tricks to have to survive in the wilds. And so, yeah, I think I would take that that book. So,
I might get that one.
Yeah, it's a lovely story. And, yeah, I'd definitely have a camera, but then I'd have to have, oh, my gosh, I'd have to have everything that goes with it to kind of load up my imagery. Am I allowed to post from this desert island?
Is there going to be internet on this desert island? That would be a bit hard.
So maybe I just need my camera, really, because then it's all, you know, the iPhone is an incredible piece of kit, isn't it? It's just... I can take video. I can start a new, maybe I'll start TikTok from this desert island.
You can sit there and read and learn. And I always think that's quite nice. It's like holidays, isn't it? If you go on holiday, it's about learning and reading and just delving into something you haven't done before. So yeah. Maybe in the middle of this desert island, there could be a TikTok account from you.
Yeah. Who knows where that went? Yeah, I could dream up a whole new genre there. So yeah. I'm quite good with my own company as well. I think you have to be, but it would be nice to still be able to have my flower community with me, take them on the journey with me.
That's right, exactly. So what's been your biggest challenge, do you think, in your business and getting to where you are now?
Oh, well, the challenge in my business is probably one I've created myself, which is imposter syndrome. I think, like we were just saying before, I think if I was starting over again, I'd just have more guts, really, to just go out there and just do it and not worry about what other people think. And I think I'm always worried about what other people are going to think. So I think for me that it's a challenge that's self-imposed, really, because things like learning how to take photos and how to do styling, and that's what you make it. You can learn those things from other people. You can create your own style. So I don't really find that a challenge, but yes, it's a self-imposed challenge, really.
You know, I speak to women all the time. You know, we did just this week in the Growth Club a session on imposter syndrome. And we had a speaker come in on imposter syndrome, because it's massive. And when you ask people and dig a bit deeper, it's bigger than you actually think it is, because it's jumps into your head. Will I? Could I? Should I? What happens if I?
Yeah.
And all this. Oh, I don't think I can do it like them, or I can. And I think it's a childhood script from somewhere which says at some point in your life, somebody has said, I don't know if you could do that, or are you any good at that?
Yeah.
Or it could have been a netball game at school. It could have been anything. And it's how you change that script. It was really interesting, actually, because yeah. It's something everyone suffers from.
And I think also, you know, you start off your career in your 20s and you're going to take on the world, or I was, and I have my fashion career. And then you kind of, I think it's when people have second careers, isn't it?
Yes.
So they haven't necessarily trained to have that second career. It's self-taught, or they've learnt online or from other people. And I think then it's like, can I do it? Am I entitled to do it? Because I'm not that young person that has got a degree in it. So I think that's a big challenge for women on second careers.
And that's fundamentally, I do lots of online courses teaching flower farmers how to make money and how to build businesses. And that's exactly what it is. So you talk about, so yesterday I spoke to a firefighter from the Isle of Wight who wants to be a flower farmer. I spoke to a pharmacist who wants to be a flower farmer. And I also spoke to a doctor who wants to be a flower farmer. So they're all right being a doctor and all right being a pharmacist and all right being a firefighter, because that's what they've trained to do. Yeah. And they love growing flowers, and they want to do it as transition from what they're day job is into it. They can't, you know, it takes years, 3 years, I think it takes, but transition out of a full-time job into a new career. And the biggest problem is their mindset.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you think somebody who's a doctor can do anything.
You and I do. They definitely don't.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. But it's lovely, isn't it? So many people want a second career in doing something creative or involves being outside or something for their mental well-being.
100%.
That's just lovely, isn't it?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This podcast episode is sponsored by First Tunnels, leaders in domestic and commercial polytunnels. A polytunnel is an amazing protective environment for plants, vegetables and flowers, extending any growing season. And whether you're growing for pleasure or commercially, whether you go for a small or a large tunnel, you can be assured of the same high quality product from First Tunnels polytunnels. I personally have 3 of their polytunnels. 2 of them I've had for over 10 years, and I highly recommend First Tunnels polytunnels for their product and also for their great customer service, which is second to none. Do pop over to their website and take a look at their range, www.firsttunnels.co.uk. That's what gives me joy, is seeing them do something different.
Yeah.
You know, that I spoke to a GP online, and he's actually on my podcast, Dr. Richard Claxton. And during COVID, he basically became very involved in social prescribing, mental, you know, going out in the garden and gardening. And he's really taken on a whole new persona now. And he does one day less week being a GP, and now he's working and running conferences about mental health and gardening. And so it's kind of like there are all these other areas you can kind of step into. I get very excited when people want to have a second career, do something different.
Yeah, absolutely. It's brilliant. Yeah.
So who's your inspiration? Who keeps you going?
Well, for me, creating with flowers is it's like being outside in nature. So what I was going to say is I'm kind of inspired by being outside because, you know, you can see on a walk how the trees are, how things are, you know, the brambles are tangled through other plants. And really with flower design, I like to emulate what's going on in nature. You know, don't bend a stem in a different way. Look at how that stem's working and what does it work with outside and what does it look good with and will it look like that in a vase, you know, that it's like a pairing. So I'm always inspired by going round gardens or on walks. And I just think, yeah, really take the time to, well, obviously as growers and farmers, you would, but really take the time to really look at how nature behaves and maybe copy that in, somehow translate that into your own designs. So I always feel good going out for walks and really, really looking at how the seasons change, because working seasonally is really important for me. You know, there's no 2 seasons the same, year on year even, is there? So I think nature is the biggest inspiration for me, really, for what I do.
Yeah, I could get quite inspired by nettles today, really inspired by weeds and nettles. And
well,
you know,
absolutely. There's every little thing has got its place, hasn't it? A reason for being. And, don't discard it.
Good for wildlife, I've decided. That's my rewilding area, I always say. Don't worry about it. That's rewilding over there.
I know. It's great now we can say that, isn't it? We've all got a rewilding area in our gardens.
Don't have to worry. It doesn't have to be in pristine anymore. We can be rewilding and encouraging nature and bumblebees. It's fine.
Yeah, I think it's altering people's perceptions of what is perfect. Perfect doesn't have to mean 1 or 12 beautiful, perfect roses. It can mean a tangle of glorious scented herbs and, you know, beautiful grown stems. So I think it's good if things aren't perfect.
I agree. So three quick questions. I think you might have answered the first one. What's your favourite flower?
Oh, I do like a hellebore. I don't have one favourite flower. I love hellebores. I love foxgloves. I like anything that's a bit spiky. Well, not spiky, but tall, like a foxglove or a larkspur or a delphinium. Yeah.
Stately. Delphinium is one of mine because it kind of stands up and it's tall and it's, I'm here. It's kind of really strong, isn't it?
But the colours, I just love the iridescent colours of delphiniums. Yeah, love them. And a garden rose. Who does not love a beautiful scented garden rose? Yeah.
David, I know you've photographed David Austin roses. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Who doesn't love the different layers of a David? Mm. I mean, for me, that's what they stand for.
All those this frills.
Yeah, all those frills.
It's got the scent as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Queen of Sweden all the way.
Yeah.
My favourite. So your childhood dream job, what did you want to be when you were at school? When you grow up? Remember having you go to the careers office and you said, what do you want to do when you leave school?
Well, an air hostess. Because I thought I can travel, I can see the world. So yeah, that was it. And I just loved it's not glamorous anymore, but when I was growing up, it was a glamorous thing, you know. So yeah, a little bit of glamour and traveling the world.
Never too late. A friend of mine who's 64 has just got the job at 61 with British Airways as worldwide crew for the first time ever. So changed her career at 61 and she is now cabin crew for British Airways worldwide. There you go. Never too late.
It's never too late. Wow, that is impressive. I'd probably break an ankle on the blow-up slide or something during a training session.
Yeah, it's hard to get through all of that. She found it challenging and we all laughed. We went, there's no way you're going. This is like ridiculous. There's no way you're going to get this job. And she did. And it was like, what?
It's great, isn't it? Women of a certain age, they've got power, they've got gravitas on an air flight. You know, who would not be confident with someone that age kind of directing them or telling them what to do or looking after them? I think it's brilliant.
And then she goes off to the Maldives for 4 nights because if you do the Maldives journey, you get 4 days there. And then she comes back and you think, can't I? And they have things called Klingons where your mates can go with you as a Klingon. So I'm waiting for my Klingon opportunity.
Have you been a Klingon yet?
Not yet, but I'm waiting. And if she's listening to this, you better know that I'm next because she's taken lots of friends to South Africa and this time of the year, great because of the climate. So I'm waiting for my Klingon opportunity. It has to be somewhere where she's not going just for one night. We want to do 4 or 5 nights before the return. But you can be a Klingon. There you go. I'll let you know when I'm going to be a Klingon.
She's a good friend to have.
So if you won the lottery, what would you do?
Oh, well, our house in Yorkshire is opposite a pub and it's a bit neglected. It needs a lot of TLC. So I think if I won the lottery, I would buy that. And my husband could run the pub. I think he'd be quite good at that. And then I'd turn it into some kind of creative hub. So really delicious food and lots of collaborations going on. People can come and create. Maybe a little flower field out the back. I think that's what I'd do. And then I wouldn't have fun.
Hope you do.
Yeah.
And really love
it. Or watch this space.
Yeah, exactly. Something might happen. I'm one of those people that I do the lottery, but I never win. And also, I've got addicted to Amaze. You know where they've got a £5 million house that you pay £10 to go into the drawer? Have you ever done that? And the one at the moment is in Chelsea. And I'd either give it to my girls because they both live in London and they'd have to live together, or I'd sell it and buy something with the £5 million. But I do it because I think, oh, wouldn't that be amazing? And a car goes with it and £100,000. And I think, oh, Ros, you're dreaming with your £10 lottery ticket. But it's a bit like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It might happen one day.
I saw a lovely one in the Lake District. Now, that would be a beautiful. Actually, maybe depends how much is in this lottery when, but Lake District is a possibility.
So what next for you? What's 2024 look like for you?
Well, as you know, we're moving and I'm building a new studio space up there and I'm really looking forward to having a really lovely place that I can call my own, that is where I can be creative. And 2024 is going to be a lot more creative for me. I've obviously just been busy moving house, settling children in university and all that kind of thing. And I feel like the creativity has gone a bit out of my work. So it's going to be a new injection of creativity. And I'm going to run the workshops from this this studio space. And I'm looking forward to welcoming people to my home. And we'll be creative together.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. 100% be up there, yeah, for sure. And when I looked, I think, on your website and saw a workshop up there, and I thought, yeah, that's me. Yeah. Got my name on it. So I think it is about being creative, and I think it's about space. And it's going to be great for you moving up to. I'm very jealous.
Yeah. Well, at uni, you come up anyway, so you must come and say hello, Ros.
I will. And you've got children at uni. They've all gone, settled, you know.
Yeah.
It's your time now, isn't it?
Me, my husband, and the cats, the girls, as we call them. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've got a cat. You can hear its bell twinkling. I've got a dog, two goats, three pigs, and six chickens.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a bit of... So I can imagine in Yorkshire you're going to be adding to your animals.
Yeah, I might have a menagerie. Yeah. A lot of people pigs. Have ducks, don't they? Ducks.
Yeah, pigs are easy.
Are they?
Yeah, really easy. Easiest
animal. You need to get them on your Instagram.
Yes, okay. I'll go and get them on today.
People love seeing animals on Instagram.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. Goats. I've got two goats as well.
Oh,
Luna and Ginny. They're just pets.
So sweet.
It's madness in between flower farming.
Do you get milk or milk from them?
No, they're just pets. Completely ridiculous.
Oh, sweet.
Indulgence. Real indulgence. Well, it's lovely to have you. We will meet. I know we're going to meet in 2024. Definitely. We'll either meet in Yorkshire or meet at Strawberry Fair or we'll meet somewhere. And
definitely.
I want to thank you for coming over to join us today. And it's been really lovely. I could have chat all day.
Yeah, I've loved it. Thanks, Ros. Thanks so much.
I look forward to next week's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate and review on your podcast app. We do have some wonderful free resources on our website at thecutflowercollective.co.uk. We also have two free Facebook communities, which we'd love you to join. For farmers or those who want to be flower farmers, we have Cut Flower Farming, Growth and Profit in Your Business. And our other free Facebook group is Learn with the Cut Flower Collective for those starting out on their flower journey. All of the links are below. I look forward to getting to know you all.